Hello, everybody. Thanks for watching. This is Justin with El Paso Media, and well, I'm interviewing Mr. Guy Anderson today. Hello, Guy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's nice to talk to you. I mean, I've been watching some of your stuff, and I'm very interested to hear you talk about well, whatever you feel like talking about, basically.
Well, as you know, my research is mainly Tartaria,
but I
touch on other subjects as well, human cloning in particular, but really it's Tartaria that's my passion.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in this topic in researching Tartaria?
Yeah, sure. I started my journey into conspiracy theories in my teens, and it was my father that encouraged me to do so. He joined the Freemasons, and he would share bits of information with me, but always kept me on the edge. He wouldn't disclose too much. And then one day I managed to get into his briefcase, and I found all sorts of unusual things and a book that I couldn't make head nor tail of because words were missing. It would just have the first and last letter, and you had to guess what it said. And he then introduced me to works like From Atlantis to the Sphinx, Holy Blood and Holy Grail, which obviously is where Dan Brown took his inspiration from. And then moved on to David Icke's work, who I'm a huge fan of. And then when I was ready, I joined the Freemasons. I then left. I'm kind of not welcome there anymore. So from my teens, I had a quest for occulted knowledge. What aren't we being told? Mm-hmm. And a very clear understanding that anybody that watches the news or reads the newspapers is ill-informed. They're being given information that they want you to see and hiding the truth, often several pages further on in the papers in very small articles that people overlook. So I've been investigating conspiracy theories for a very long time, reading about them. But Tartaria was introduced to me by, I have to say, the legend that is Max Egan. All conspiracy theorists, I'm sure know Max very well, or at least know his work. And he introduced me to it. I reached out to him and said that I don't know why, but this has become something I'm more obsessed with than any other conspiracy theory, but people aren't engaging with me. I've got quite a big following on social media. They're not listening when I talk about Tartaria. They're dismissing it. And as he said, you know, to understand Tartaria is to understand every conspiracy theory, because it is what bolts them all together. And if you can wake one person up to Tartaria, you might have saved someone's life. And that stayed with me over six years on now. That stayed with me. And it is the biggest cover up, the biggest act of deception that's ever taken place on our realm. So it's very important to me.
We can dig into the details later, but in a nutshell, what would you say is the core of this conspiracy theory, the Tartaria conspiracy theory?
The core of it is wiping 800 years of our history, rewriting maps, rewriting atlases, and rewriting history, the falsification of our history, and denying us from knowing who we really are, who was here before, and creating a fake narrative regarding technology from the Industrial Revolution to where we are today. It's all a complete lie. We were far more advanced 250 years ago than we are now.
As is evidenced by the buildings that they built back in the day that we cannot replicate today.
The buildings are a key point, but they're just the tip, very tip of the iceberg. You're talking about a civilization that was harnessing telluric energy from the ether, which Tesla, who may or may not have existed, was in theory trying to reverse engineer. So the fact that people are paying for electricity right now that is still being harnessed for free, I think is perhaps fraudulent and a crime against us.
Really? They're still harvesting, they're still using that technology to harvest energy and then selling it as it has been produced by building, by burning fossil fuels or stuff like that.
Fossil fuels is a show. You're watching a theater there. The pylons are pulling telluric energy. So you're supposed to see the big power station and think, wow, they're burning a lot of coal there, but they're not. Obviously, they do burn lots of coal there, but that's not how the power is generated. It's just a front.
So what makes the turbines run? Is that the actual energy they're pulling from the ether?
Absolutely.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you will also notice that all nuclear reactors are positioned where ley lines meet. All of them, every single one. So they're all pulling energy from the ether, telluric energy. So we're paying for energy that's free. We're going into buildings called cathedrals to worship when they were actually designed for healing. You're not supposed to go in there to worship. That's not what they're for, nor churches.
The healing is a frequency type of healing, right?
Absolutely. It's cymatics. Cymatics and resonance. So we have been tricked. We think that we're advanced when we're not. All of the technology we have is causing us harm, whereas before it benefited us. We listen to the wrong music now on purpose. The frequency's been changed. The church bells were changed. The pipe organs that used to heal our internal organs, they have been changed. And people now go to these buildings to worship the demiurge without realizing it. That's just some of the examples of what they've done. They've denied people of their history. And as a result of removing Tartaria and the people from Tartaria, between 1776 and 1876, when this peaked, we lost 3.35 billion people dead.
Do you know what happened to them, actually? What happened to their remains?
Well, some remains you can find in places throughout the world. Paris is perhaps the best-known catacomb. There are catacombs everywhere, even here.
Buried under the cities and under the cathedrals.
Yeah, but that's not all that they did. There were mass graves, catacombs, obviously, which were display cabinets, trophy cabinets, to show other people what they were capable of doing. But they buried lots of them under golf courses, parks called Hyde Park, lots of Hyde parks. A lot of the bones were used for bone china, and the remains were used for fertilizer. So the Tartarians that killed each other unknowingly in the Napoleonic Wars, where they were fighting themselves, most of the remains were returned to Britain and they were used as fertilizer for crops. So we ate them.
That's quite cynical, actually, to do that.
It's disgusting.
It is,
It's disgusting, isn't it? Yeah, so we used their teeth. Mm-hmm. Waterloo dentures became the most popular false teeth at the time. So we used their bones for china, we used their teeth to eat with, and we used their remains as fertilizer.
Wow.
Hmm.
So then who did this? Who concocted this massacre and the subsequent removal of all knowledge of what happened in the past?
The Jesuits.
It's the Jesuits.
Yeah, but they were funded by the Rothschilds. The Vatican was bankrupt. So the Rothschilds took control, and obviously they still control the Vatican today. You have Pepe Orsini as the head pope, the real pope, not the fake one we see on TV, but the grey pope that runs it. They installed a Rothschild bloodline as the head of the Roman Catholic Church at the Vatican, the Jesuit order, and bailed the Vatican out. But in return, they wanted control, which is what they did with the British monarchy, too. They took over most European royal families and started to cede the heir to the throne for each one. So Queen Victoria was the first Rothschild to sit on the throne. So Charles is a Rothschild. William's a Rothschild.
And Victoria is basically the mother of all of these royal houses, right? I mean, I think the Russian and the German houses, they're all related to her.
Yeah, and she's a Rothschild. Huh. So they're all imposters. They have no right to sit on the throne. They're nothing whatsoever to do with British monarchy. They're imposters. And they use the Freemasons, the Jesuits infiltrated everything from religion to the Freemasons, which was once, you know, a group of people that were sharing sacred geometry that would be considered wise, you know, elders, people that went back to King Solomon, the time of King Solomon's temples in Hiram Abiff, that understood how the pyramids were built, that understood cymatics and the golden ratio and how to build things that balanced. And they infiltrated the Freemasons.
This would be,
and then had the Freemasons
back in the 1700s with Adam Weishaupt, I suppose. Yes,
yeah. It's all, yeah. The Illuminati obviously was right. Infiltrated too. They've infiltrated everything.
Funded by those same Jesuits. Rothschilds.
Sorry,
funded by those same Rothschilds. Adam Weishaupt was.
Yes. So he was infiltrated, and they all were. So it's no different to today. You know, the Rothschilds put in prime ministers, presidents, world leaders, and of course, you know, that's who puts in the British government through the Bilderberg Group, and the American president, obviously, he's funded and controlled by the Rothschilds. Anyone can dig into that one. That's an easy one because they bailed him out each time he's gone bankrupt.
Right.
So the world leaders are just puppets, and they're the front men, if you like, and front women for the Rothschild and 13 bloodline families. So, it was important for Tartaria, for them, to be removed and all traces to be removed because they had the Industrial Revolution coming, a lot of money to be made from that and following that pharmaceuticals by keeping us ill and controlling our supply of power.
So, and these pharmaceuticals, that would basically be the Rockefeller family that was spearheading.
Yeah, Standard Oil. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, you know, petroleum is always has been huge in the production of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, and well, basically, they shifted from actually healing people to being able to treat them for as long as they may survive your treatments.
Yeah, so a nation of sick people is more financially beneficial than a nation of well people, and so they tend to treat symptoms and not the root cause. So yeah, and often you'll find that one pharmaceutical remedy has side effects that requires you to take another pharmaceutical remedy. So they want us permanently ill, not just because of the money, but because when we're not feeling quite right, or we're under the weather, we're easier to control, and we don't tend to question things if we're not feeling quite right. We let things go, and that makes us easier to control.
I mean, I've taken years to uncover some of what you're talking about, so I know a little bit of what you're talking about. But how does this go? How did it go for you? Did you from being a Freemason? From that time onward, study little bits of it and then piece it all together? Or how did your journey go from?
No, the Freemasons have nothing to do with Tartaria for me. They were implicit in helping the Jesuits remove lots of evidence. And there are documents out there that clearly show that. You know, I've got them. That they were instructed to go out there and remove. Go to every town and city in the world. And literally walk in people's houses, go through their books, their paperwork, everything, and remove everything they could. In Russia, it was more serious. There was a period called, which they call Red Terror, where people were actually, that had information blueprints and had this technology and were talking about Tartaria, were taken away. They were usually killed on their way to prison.
This would be when Bolsheviks grabbed hold of the Russian territory. Yeah. Beginning of communism.
And they wanted, because Russia was really the main country for Tartaria, and Moscow in particular. It was important that they destroyed as much of that as possible, because the West wanted everybody to see Russia as being backward.
Mm-hmm.
So wiping out Tartaria did two things. One, it gave the Jesuits and the Rothschild families, it gave them all of the information on how things were built and how things worked, mm-hmm. how to harness energy. You know, it gave them everything that they needed. And then it gave them the opportunity to destroy everything, keeping it for themselves, and then creating new worlds like Australia, and then, you know, Britain with the Industrial Revolution, and America, you know, these new worlds that thrived from the Industrial Revolution using technology in a very crude way from Tartaria, but in a way in which it no longer operated on electricity, but was operating from fossil fuels. And then ultimately, you know, electric vehicles were replaced with the internal combustion engine. And it's all been cleverly done. Airships that worked on telluric energy that were charged from what we call today lighthouses,
mm-hmm.
they were scrapped, you know, yeah. following the Hindenburg planned disaster in favor of controlled travel fueled by petroleum. So it's all about greed. But I didn't join the Freemasons to understand Tartaria. I joined a very long time ago. I left about 7 or 8 years ago now for a number of reasons, but I certainly wouldn't be welcome back there now. But I didn't learn anything about Tartaria from Freemasonry. Freemasonry for me was trying to get occulted knowledge. Mm-hmm. What can I learn here that my dad won't tell me?
And can you give us like a little bit of an example, or can you describe what you've learned there? Is that like how the human body functions, or
no, they don't. They're nothing to do with that. They're sacred geometry. They originated from Master Stonemason.
Mm-hmm.
So they're nothing to do with the human body. It is just to do with sacred geometry. The understanding of cymatics, frequency, and like I said earlier on, the golden ratio. But no, the Freemasonry is nothing to do with the human body.
So did those Masons or the Jesuits at some point actually build anything? Or was it just about destroying what the previous civilization actually built?
Well, there are two sort of questions there. The Jesuits have built nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the Freemasons originally built King Solomon's Temple.
Okay, using those...
They're two completely different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the Jesuits infiltrated them in the 1700s. But yeah, so King Solomon's Temple was built by Hiram Abiff, who was the first Grand Master Freemason and considered almost royalty by King Solomon, and was the only person outside the royal family that was built inside the walls of King Solomon's temple, where everybody else was buried outside. So he was held in very high regard, and he was killed because he wouldn't share sacred geometry with three people that approached him one evening. And that's why they wear mourning suits to Freemason lodge meetings, because they're in mourning for Hiram Abiff, who gave his life rather than share how sacred geometry worked and hand over passwords and give them the information they needed to be able to get into the lodge themselves and pretend to be Freemasons. And they were all referred to as Jules, J-U-L-E-S, Jules. And sometimes that got mistranslated to Jews, J-U-E-S,
mm-hmm.
not Judaism, the Jewish faith. I'm talking about the name. And there was a reference to that with something that happened in London a very long time ago, which is Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
There was a piece of graffiti written on a wall by one of the victims, and it said, "The three Jews are the people that won't be blamed for anything." And Jews, at the time, people thought that they were talking about Jewish people, but it wasn't. They had written J-U-E-S. And that was to show that the Freemasons were actually responsible for the murders that we associate with Jack the Ripper, and they were putting their kind of mark on a wall to show people that knew, other Freemasons, that it was them doing this work.
So would you say that in, well, the current setup of the Freemasons, you could still get some of that knowledge, or is it, has it been infiltrated and totally, well, obscured?
What knowledge?
Well, the knowledge of sacred geometry and things that used to be passing.
Yeah, you can still as you get progress, that. They teach you about the tools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the higher up you go, each time you're elevated, you know, there are 33 degrees. Most people only get to the third. But each time you progress, they present two new tools with you, tools of a master Freemason, okay. A master stonemason. Freemason just means free and accepted Mason. Before they were just stonemasons, but now because people that aren't stonemasons join, they've changed it to free and accepted, and that's all Freemasonry means. And so, yeah, each time you progress, they present you with two new tools and explain how they were used and what their significance is.
When you say most people only get to the third level, how does that work? They stop you actively from progressing, or... do people lose interest?
Most people get to the third degree and stay there because to go higher, you need to join a separate rung. So what Freemasonry is what they call craft. It's a craft lodge where they're teaching you a craft, stonemasonry. If you want to progress after the third degree, you move into something called chapter. And there are lots of groups, offshoots, if you like, connected to that. The most famous would be the Knights Templar. It's a lot of work, a lot of learning, awful lot of reading. Mm-hmm. It's quite intense, and it isn't for everyone. So it was something that I really didn't have the time to do. It used to take me a couple of hours to get to London because I met at the Grand Lodge. That's where my lodge was. So I was meeting with very, very high figures within the British government and police.
I can imagine.
And also the odd celebrity as well. We had some quite famous people. What I didn't want to do was, I was self-employed at the time. Well, I still am. I was having to take a day off work, which cost me money, then drive for anything up to 2 hours to get into the centre of London, pay a lot of money to park, pay to be there, and then drive back late at night. And I thought, I don't mind doing that once a month, but if I joined another group like the Knights Templar, then you have something called Lodge of Instruction, where you go once a month to learn and rehearse things, and then you have the meeting. I couldn't commit to that. And I didn't have time for the extra learning. I just about had enough time for Freemasonry, but all I'd seen was people come and go. People join because they thought they might get promoted faster through the police force. And some people that just turned it into their own kind of club. And it wasn't about that. And I got bored with it. And I realized after I'd become a master Freemason, which takes a few years, that I was never going to get to the 33rd degree. It wasn't going to happen. And I just became disillusioned with it. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people that join because they want to increase their social circle. Some people are lonely. And a lot of people join because they want to raise money for charity. And they enjoy doing that. But you'll find that the average Freemason is quite old. And it tends to be something that once you're retired, you can throw yourself into because you have more time. I didn't have the time. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I really did when I joined. I thought I would go all the way to the 33rd degree and that everybody had the ability to do that. But it's a closed shop. You don't get to the 33rd degree unless you are someone of interest or significance to the people that run the world.
So then you left. Do you like, can you actually leave them? Or are you a Mason for life? I don't know how that would work.
When I was a kid, I joined the Cub Scouts. Have you heard of those?
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
know if they have that in Holland. Well, when I was about 12 years old, I left. As far as I'm aware, at 54, I'm not a Cub Scout anymore.
Right. Okay.
So if I join the Freemasons and then leave, I've left.
Right.
They may so as far as I'm concerned,
some record of you being there in the past, but
You know, they don't throw stuff away. You know, what would the point be?
But you're not being followed or anything like if you were to leave something like Scientology.
That's all TV, theatre. The people that talk about Freemasonry the most, about what goes on and that they worship the devil and all this, they're people that aren't Freemasons.
Mm.
So, of course, they know absolutely nothing whatsoever about it. And I'll often get told that somebody knows someone that's a 33rd degree Freemason. They don't, because people that reach that level don't go around telling anyone. They probably haven't even told their family that they're that high up. So it's all nonsense. Mm-hmm. What happens when you get up to the top, I have no doubt in my mind that it is satanic. I have no doubt. Can I prove it? No, and neither can anybody else. Of course, you know, there are records of every lodge meeting. So from the day that I joined, my name will be in there saying today we initiated Guy Anderson and blah, blah, blah. Each meeting I've been at, my name will be in there. But there's no need to dispose of anything because people leave all the time. You know, dozens of people left during the time I was there for, I don't know, over 10 years. And during that period of time, lots of people left. They moved, lost interest, couldn't afford to go, bored with it. So they don't start hounding them saying you must come back to the next meeting because it's not like that.
So then after leaving, you your thirst for knowledge obviously wasn't quenched yet. What kind of avenues of research did you pursue after that? What kind of conspiracy theories did you uncover or research?
Human cloning. Human cloning was the main one. So around the maybe a bit before I left, I started looking into cloning. And in 2012, a man called Donald Marshall came out, and anybody that's sort of looked into human cloning will know that name well. He was the first person that was from an Illuminati family to actually explain what happens in the underground military bases that we call DUMs. He was the first one to actually explain it and the process and exactly what goes on there. And I found that fascinating. So I started following him. I started looking into human cloning. And then when I came across Max Egan talking about Tartaria, I started looking more closely into how they repopulated because they'd lost so many people. How did they manage to get suddenly enough people within a 100-year period to provide a workforce for the Industrial Revolution and then go on to repopulate the Earth? And that's where human cloning popped up again. So in the late 1700s, early 1800s, from that period, for about 100 years into the early 1900s, they were cloning, mass cloning, and replaced about 80% of the population of the Earth.
It's kind of strange if you dive into it. There's all of these pictures of these huge cities with all of these buildings and no people around. And
yeah,
dirt roads.
All dead.
Like, how did they build everything? How did they get the stones transported to those sites? It's like, well, and who built them? And for who? Who lived there? And then
exactly.
All of a sudden you have these orphan trains and you have all of these mental asylums popping up. And it's like, well, what was going on there? Can you tell us a little bit about what you've found about these subjects?
Yeah, if anybody wants to have a look at, pick any city anywhere in the world, around the time they tell us the camera was first introduced, which obviously the camera's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. So you'll see early photographs where there are nobody, there's nobody present, there's nobody walking around these cities. The streets are empty. Russia more so, but everywhere, frankly, because people had been killed, everybody had been removed, the children had been taken away, and so these buildings were founded. So you'd often see that a building was founded or established rather than built, because they try not to lie, so they they use their words very carefully. And that's why politicians will never say yes or no. They'll dance around something because they don't want to be seen in public to tell a lie. So these buildings were found dead.
Found dead.
And buried.
That's what founded
found
means.
Dead. Yeah, founded actually is a play on words. So, yeah, the buildings were found dead. And they took them over like cuckoos. They took over the buildings and they then had to repopulate. And this is where we see the Cabbage Patch Babies first appear. They were mixed in with orphans. And in America, we had the orphan train movement, and they were distributed all over the world. In Britain, we sent a lot of children to Canada. Obviously, in Ireland, they had a fake potato famine, mm-hmm. which, if you think about it, the Irish weren't only eating potatoes.
Right.
So to have to leave your country because you've run out of potatoes is a bit of a silly story. So they have fake outbreaks, fake famines, and so on. And encourage people to those that were still alive to resettle in the new world. So that's what they did with Australia and America in particular. They wiped the history. They nuked the place. The place was completely nuked, as was most of Europe, and a lot of the world was nuked. And people were then suffering from radiation sickness, mm-hmm. and we saw as a direct result of that them start wearing wigs because they were bald, oh. and heavy white makeup with lead in it. The white makeup was also hiding blemishes and scars, and they would wear gloves all the time and scarves, just hiding themselves. And they would tell the public that they had cholera, that they had syphilis, and other different diseases, where actually they were suffering from radiation poisoning. So there were a number of things that took place to get rid of the buildings, as many buildings as possible, and
yeah,
people.
Yeah, like these world fairs, right?
All around yeah. the world. Yeah, they were Tartarian cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, every single one of them was destroyed. They would have an accidental fire or just be demolished within months of opening.
Yeah.
Of course, if you dig into any particular world fair or exposition, you'll find that there are no records of where the stone came from, no. the glass, the metal, the labor. And if you check with the hospital records in each city, there are no people admitted for any injuries resulting in working on those fairs. There are no records of where the people stayed that worked on the construction or where they came from. They're all weak.
And you have these fires all across the world in these big cities, like the Chicago fire, obviously, which was started by a lamp being knocked over by some cow. But the weird thing is there's hardly any casualties in these events. These buildings get destroyed. Yeah. The stone burns for some reason, but the people, well, just happen to escape scot-free.
Yeah, and that's because there weren't any people around. Because they got rid of the people.
Yeah.
The Great Fire of London is an interesting one because Anatoly Fomenko, who's done a lot of work into Tartaria and our timeline,
right.
he suggests that 800 years have been falsified. So that would mean that 800 years is quite difficult to add to works of art. To buildings, to literature, and so on. So you can put a 1 in front of it instead.
Yeah.
Or an M, a Roman numeral M. So that's what's happened with a lot of buildings and a lot of documents as well, and tombstones and so on.
Yeah.
So the Great Fire of London, and we think that 1666 was the Great Fire of London. Well, if you remove the first one.
What's left
to 666? Yeah, so they do use these numbers. They do work with these numbers when events happen. But the fires that took place between 1776, with the start of New World Order, and 1876, the number of fires across the world are into the hundreds for major cities. Just major cities, hundreds of them burnt, within 100 years, burnt down, losing anything up to 75%. And to burn brick and rock 4,000 degrees is required.
What do you think that actually is then? Is that a directed energy weapon or some
exactly
sort of
nuke? Yeah. And that's why people were suffering with radiation poisoning.
Ah, that does make sense. Yeah. So that's also old world technology then.
Yeah, direct energy weapons. I mean, the first time we see one is the Vajra, which is the Hindu weapon. They call it the Thunderbolt, and it's a handheld tool that that charges with energy from the ether, and then you literally, like a laser, you point it. Elon Musk has one on his bedside table.
He does?
Huh. Yeah, you can buy replicas. Yeah.
Really?
But yeah, that's a direct energy weapon.
So does he have more of that technology that might be, well, Tesla-related or, well, ascribed to Tesla, but basically reverse-engineered from what used to be?
Well, it's difficult to know because, of course, Musk doesn't invent anything himself, does he?
No.
He just employs people that do. He's not Tesla. He bought Tesla, didn't he? And I don't know. I mean, to me, he's just Jeffrey Epstein's friend. I don't know. You know, much more than that, really. I've done some digging into him, but he's not on my radar. Anything that he's doing would be reverse engineered for sure, because he's in the right circle to get that information. And of course, you've got to bear in mind that Tesla is an anagram of the word steel.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So it's stolen technology, and it's in plain sight. The irony is that if you ask most people in the street, have you ever heard of Tesla, they'll think of the car manufacturer and Jeffrey's friend, and they won't think of Nikola Tesla, which is quite unusual.
Right. Yeah. You know, have you, well, you've mentioned before that he might have never existed. What is the theory regarding that?
Okay. This was the pioneer in the 20th century of technology.
Right. Yeah. I suppose invented the Elon Musk of his day.
Well, Elon Musk has never invented anything, so you can't compare the two people.
No, that's right. He's more like
Elon Musk
Edison,
employs
that's
people.
The same time
frame. Yeah. So you know, but I understand. Yes, you could say, or but it's easier, I suppose, to say he kind of was the Elon Musk. But you know, it is important to understand that Elon Musk has never invented anything, nothing at all. He just employs people that do.
Right.
So he's nothing to do with inventing things. In fact, if you ever listen to him talk, he doesn't know very much about anything. and he comes from a very dark, satanic family. I think most people probably know that. So you've got the pioneer of technology, the early 20th century, who invented the X-ray, the remote control, the radio control, neon lights, obviously pulling energy from the ether,
right.
Transmitting radio signals, harnessing energy from Niagara Falls, and so on. Yeah, so if you look at Tesla, so this man invented over 300 patents, and at the time a patent had to work.
Right.
It couldn't be a theory, it had to work. And so in a very short period of time, he's invented all of these things, yet, and he was apparently speaking publicly. People were paying for him to attend dinner parties as the, you know, the star guest. He was being interviewed by lots of different magazines and newspapers and publications. He was giving lectures everywhere. There's no video footage of him anywhere in the world. There is of Edison and Einstein. Why not Tesla? And do you know what his museum said to me?
Is that the one in Belgrade?
Yeah.
I've actually visited that last year and saw his urn, or that ball that they actually at least present as his urn containing his ashes, supposedly.
Well, they say that there's no video footage of him because he might have been shy.
He might have been shy, but he was a public speaker.
Absolutely.
How does that add up?
It doesn't, does it?
No.
So there's no video footage of him, and he was a pioneer of technology. But there is of Edison and there is of Einstein. You weren't taught about him at school. You were taught about Edison.
Right, yeah.
And he has no living descendants, just like Napoleon, as another example.
And I suppose
no living descendants.
Edison was also a Musk type of guy, right? He employed people more than inventing stuff himself. I mean, he did supposedly invent some stuff, and the patents were in his name, but he was more of a Musk type of character, yes?
Well, he employed Tesla. Tesla worked for him in Paris and then came over to New York, and then they had their big falling out, and that's when Westinghouse got involved. But yeah, so there's no video footage and no living descendants. So if you want to create somebody to attach a load of inventions to that change history, that change the course of history, then you need to make sure they don't have any living descendants. They're not going to have any living descendants, if you think about it. So, you know, if I turn around and say, well, I met somebody called John Smith, and he invented this, this, and this, and you can't find him, you can't contact him, he's died now, you can't find anyone related to him, there's nothing at all, then you can't find out whether I'm telling the truth or not. There's no way of doing that. And there are people out there that say, well, when all of his files were taken from the New Yorker hotel, that they went off to a secure location in New York, a warehouse in New York, two truckloads of paperwork. And they were eventually handed over to his nephew. Well, where's his nephew? Who's his nephew? Where is he? What's his name?
Yeah, and where are his children? Yeah.
There's nothing. But the interesting thing is he never wrote anything down. So how do you fill two trucks with paperwork taken from a safe in a hotel? So the safe in his hotel room would have to be the size of two trucks. He's only in a hotel room. He's got two rooms, one that he lives in, one that he works in. So he doesn't write anything down ever. Yet it takes two trucks to carry the paperwork from his safe.
And no one knows where it's at today.
No one knows where it is. There's no living descendants. And I've been saying this for years now, you know, where are his living descendants? And someone approached me and said, you know, I've had the odd person say, well, actually, a friend of mine knew his father. And they didn't. They just come out with stuff. They can't prove anything, because each time I say, oh, that's wonderful, can you send me a photograph, please, of you all together, of them together? And they can't. And then somebody told me that they were his niece, that he was their uncle. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. You know, can you send me a photograph, please, of you together? And they stopped talking to me. So there are some people out there that believe that they are related to him, or that somebody they once knew their family and so on. I'm not saying that there wasn't a person called Nikola Tesla. I'm saying that I find it very hard to believe that this person has a story that doesn't make sense when you look at it logically. I find it very hard to believe that all of that happened. You know, so we've got someone who claimed that they were getting the information from Venus, downloads. Okay. Venus, the Venusians were sending the information to him. He would have a vision, and it was Venus. The information was coming from Venus. So that's how he got the information. He then never wrote anything down, but it takes two trucks to transport what he didn't write down to a secure location. No video footage of him anywhere. Over 300 paintings that all worked and changed the course of history within a small period of time.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, and today, so, and I've been saying this for years now, if anybody watching this has any evidence to prove that they were related to him, are related to him, or have photographs with him, send them. Because all we ever see online are just two or three different images of him. We see him young. We don't know if that's him or not. Then we see the famous one, which is obviously on the front cover of my books, which looks very much like Frank Zappa, the musician.
Yeah.
And then we see a very old, frail man, which may or may not be him. That's all we see. Where are all of the photographs? This is a pioneer of technology. Where are the photographs of him giving public speeches? Where are those? Where is the video footage?
Is there also one of him sitting in this this huge room with a little electricity?
With Mark Twain. Sometimes you see Mark Twain in it. Sometimes you don't. But yeah, it's the same side image.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the which looks like Frank Zappa. And there are a lot of people that look into that more closely, that conspiracy theory that Frank Zappa was used to take to pose for Nikola Tesla. And some people believe that Frank Zappa is Nikola Tesla. That Nikola Tesla went back in time and brought a younger version of himself back to the future. And that became Frank Zappa. And anyone who's looked into his music will know that it's science and physics. It's not music. He's working with frequency, specific frequencies. There is a case for that. And of course, you know, military family, and there's always connections like Jim Morrison and so on. There's always connections with certain musicians and the US military. So, you know, we can throw that into the pot. So it's difficult to know. But for me, there are too many anomalies for it to be a matter of fact that he existed and did all of these things. There are too many things that don't make sense. And why wasn't I taught about him at school? Only Edison.
Right, yeah. So then what would be a logical explanation that explains the things that he supposedly created and, which are there? I mean, the technology in Niagara Falls, it is there. It's ascribed to him, but, what would be a logical explanation? That is just old world technology. It's being reintroduced, or it's explained away. Its existence is explained away by ascribing it to this fake person. What would you?
Yes. Yeah. Fake or maybe someone who wasn't quite the genius we've been told. You know, he, like I said, he may have existed. He may not have done, but I don't think he is what we've been told. If he did exist, if you have reverse engineered over 300 different things that are going to change the course of history, where do you tell people they came from? Can you say that you've uncovered them from a previous civilization?
Probably not, no.
No, because then that throws up all sorts of problems. Well, this previous civilization was clearly more advanced than we are now.
Right.
Well, how does that work? How does evolution work? Is everything in the Bible true? Because that doesn't make any sense now you've said this. You know, it throws everything out. So, you know, we then have very clear evidence that previous civilizations were far more advanced. And then you can throw Hyperborea, Lemuria, Mu, Atlantis into the mix as well. And then that leads more towards the story of the Anunnaki making us, which I personally believe is the case. We certainly weren't, you know, the story in the Bible, I think is loosely based upon that. So, you know, if you create a person and say there was this genius called Nikola Tesla, or there is this genius called Nikola Tesla, and he's working with us, he's working a little bit with the US government, which he was, he's working with MIT, he's developed this, he's developed that, and all of a sudden you've just got somebody who turns up and talks about things or follows a script that he's got. He's giving a lecture and he follows a script and he's reading this stuff out. You've got somebody you can pin all of these things to and say, well, he was a genius.
Right.
He was ahead of his time. And when anybody said to him, like I said earlier on, where do you get these ideas from? They come to me in visions from Venus. Well, how do you answer that?
Yeah. That's quite strange. It's basically the same thing that they do with all of these buildings. They have to explain away, oh, there's this guy and he didn't have any experience designing anything. He wasn't an architect. He wasn't trained at all, but he just in 1 year or maybe 2 years, in a couple of months, just built this huge cathedral or this huge palace and then did some around the country in the same year. He built like five or six of them.
Yeah.
If you look into
My favorite one that I looked into is in a place here in England called Bath. It's known as a Roman, you know, a Roman city, and lots of tourists come to have a look around. And there is a water treatment hospital there, you know, a few hundred years old. And it's been left in a terrible state. I mean, it's in it's abandoned now. It's empty, boarded up. And I had a look at the architect that they said was responsible for designing it. And then I looked at the year it was constructed. The architect was one year old.
1 year old.
Yeah.
Wow.
A very clever baby.
Yeah.
To be able to produce architectural plans at 1 year old. I mean, that's
yeah. Yeah.
That's
with
incredible.
All the weight distribution and sometimes calculations and everything. That's just fantastic.
And you can find that. Sometimes it won't necessarily be the building you're looking at.
Mm.
You'll realize it when you look at other buildings that person has been credited with. And you'll see, hold on a moment, that one was built before he was born. That one was built when he was 5 or 6 years old. And there are a lot of people that got contracts to build things, cities in Australia, just for example, by entering a competition.
Right. Yeah, 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 exactly. And then it was built by, well, just some slave labor, some convict.
Yeah, like, in 6 months or a year.
Not skilled laborers. No, they just whipped it all together like that.
Yeah, because if you look at the story of America, we're going to say that a lot of people came from Ireland and Italy,
mm-hmm.
for example, and that they all happened to be master stonemason,
yeah.
That they were glaziers, they understood metallurgy, so, you know, they understood physics, chemistry, cymatics, they had a very good understanding of logistics, of quarrying and processing stone. And rock, that's lucky because they managed to do that in Australia too.
Yeah.
Just happens that a lot of the prisoners that arrived on the island were competent stonemasons and master craftsmen. I mean, that's lucky.
They lived in like these shacks made of wood.
That's what we were capable
these
of building.
Structures. Well, in a year, or well,
and for who?
And
who were they building? If you just look at Australia, yeah. all of these incredible cities that they built, for who? But there weren't enough people there to justify what was built. None of it makes any sense. It's the same in America. You've got huge cities across America that were built at a time when the population figures were a fraction of what they are now.
Right.
So it defies all logic. And, of course, for them all to be built at the same time, where did the workforce come from? Now, they'll tell you, if you look at the building of say, San Francisco, just for example, after the fire, they'll say that people came from other towns and cities to work. But their cities were being rebuilt at exactly the same time.
Right.
So none of it makes sense. And of
By
course,
no
as I
one,
said earlier
for
on,
no one.
Yeah. So, yeah. So they think these buildings were found dead.
Founded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was I wrote about it in Tesla and the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lecture given by a guy called Herbert. I can't remember his first name, in a place in America called Iron County. And this was in the late 1700s. And he gave this lecture, invited lots of people to attend. And then it was printed and sent all over America. And then it was sent to England and other parts of the world as well. And it said, come to Iron County here in America. There are houses that you can just have. There are farms that you can take. They are all empty. It's just like everywhere else here.
Huh. So then is that like if you build it, they will come? Or like, well, we found it and now we have to repopulate. That's basically the more logical conclusion.
Yeah. Right? Have a free house.
Right. Huh.
These are sitting here empty. Take it. There's nobody here. We've got rid of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to come to America, you can have a free house. And of course, the parasites, as I call them, the Rothschilds and Rockefellers and so on, the Windsors, all of these families and their friends, they took the best buildings for themselves.
Right. Yeah.
So if you look at, you mentioned the orphan train movement earlier on. If you look at the orphan train movement, the person that was quite heavily involved with the publicity, with raising money for it, the publicity behind it, was P.T. Barnum, the greatest showman of
oh,
the world.
Right.
Now, if you look at the house he had in America, that was the former Iranian palace.
Huh.
So these people, in exchange for doing the work of the Jesuits and the Freemasons and the Odd Fellows, they're rewarded with the most incredible buildings because they were already there. So they are cuckoos. They take over somebody else's home.
Yeah. And pretend they built it themselves. That's weird.
Yeah, without being able to provide any information on who built it, how, and more importantly, where the materials came from.
Right.
The stone, the glass, the metal. Where did that come from? Where's the quarry? Where's the factory that made the bricks?
And where who transported that? It? I mean, it's just horse and carriage by that time, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How?
Yeah, you know, thousands and thousands of tons of granite, marble, and limestone shipped on a horse and buggy or a horse and cart across hundreds of miles. Yeah.
Sounds more like a fairy tale than actual history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a complete fabrication.
Right. Guy, I'm not sure how much time we have left, but I wouldn't want to let you go without giving you the opportunity to talk a bit about, well, what you're currently doing and what your upcoming events are. I know that you're going to be in Sittard in the Netherlands in, well, I think it's May, right? May 3rd, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so looking forward to that. I've given a lot of talks on Tartaria here in England, but I haven't done any overseas yet. So it'll be a first for me, and I'm really looking forward to it. Having said that, I might be doing one in Ireland in April, but it's not confirmed yet. But so I'm really looking forward to that. So at the moment, I did actually have a talk in London this weekend at a big event, but I've had to cancel that because I've not been very well actually for the last week. At the moment, I am still promoting my latest book, which came out in December.
What's
which
that book
is called? Conspiracy Theories from Agatha to Zombies. There are 87 different chapters, and each one is a different conspiracy theory. So it's a big book. It is a big book.
We'll put a link in the description and also put some pictures up. Oh, there it is. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can see how thick it is.
Oh, yeah.
So 87 chapters in there. So I still sort of have to do promotional work on the three books that I've written. The most popular is obviously Tesla and Cabbage Patch Kids.
Right.
Most people that have researched Tartaria know of the book or may have read it or listened to the audiobook. But I've learned a lot more since I wrote that book. People have shared information with me that they don't want to share themselves.
Right.
They're using me as a conduit. So I have information now on people that actually worked on these buildings, that created them, that got them working using cymatics and frequency, that had them resonating. I actually have names, dates, places, buildings, and so on. I also have a lot of information now on exactly what the Jesuits did, how the maps were badly translated and by who on purpose. The start of a lot of fires, more evidence on what they did with bodies, more evidence on the electricity that was being harnessed and how, and how that all operated. Also music. Classical music is all Tartarian. None of those composers, they're all fake. So whether you're talking about Beethoven, Mozart, these are all fake. It was Tartarian music, as are all musical instruments. They are all Tartarian. The piano is the best example. In 1850, between 1850 and 1900, the number of pianos made required 3 million elephants to be killed.
Oh, because of the ivory for those keys. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah,
3 million.
Which is nonsense. Hmm. Yeah, we haven't got 3 million elephants today and they're protected.
Right.
Where are the bodies? 3 million elephants killed within 50 years. Where are the mass graves? There aren't any.
Hmm.
I've done all the research. There are none. Nowhere. The beetles that are used, the shellac beetle that's used to make that black gloss varnish, they have to be imported from India. They needed millions of them for those pianos.
And there aren't no that records. Many around.
There are no records, and there were never that many.
No.
You've also then got to distribute these pianos, some of them grand pianos, on a horse and buggy.
Right.
For hundreds of miles across America.
These very delicate instruments on a horse and buggy carried around all across the globe.
Yeah.
Well, the earth, I should say, basically.
Yeah. So that's, you know, so there are just a few examples there. And the tension on the springs, I mean, and strings, you're going into tons, you know, 30 tons of pressure. And the strings themselves, where were they made? Where was the frame of the piano made? I mean, that's a very, very heavy part of the piano itself. Where were they made? Now, we're told that they were all made in people's sheds or back gardens, and these were artisan family built businesses that created these pianos. The strange thing with that is, from the same period of time, you can take any moving part from one piano and it will fit perfectly onto another. That's only possible with CNC machinery and production manufacturing. So all musical instruments, the story behind them is a lie.
I suppose the same would apply to those Stradivarius instruments, right? I mean, we cannot reproduce them today, not in that quality. So
no,
how was it made? How is it that we still have so many of them left?
Yeah, exactly. So that's just one part of it. I mean, music used to be used to heal.
Yeah.
You know, we were healing with it and we felt better. Similar to going to see, you can imagine going to say, I'll just give you an example, the Royal Albert Hall in London, and you're seeing Pavarotti. That was the whole purpose of that building, and that music inside that building was to heal and make people feel good, euphoric. Now look at what we listen to and where we go to hear it.
Yeah, these grim buildings and...
Yeah, people, they're brutal buildings, brutalistic buildings, people getting drunk, taking drugs, fighting, getting crushed at the front or too far back you can't see. Music that's designed to make you angry, make you want to fight, make you want to rebel against the system, or in some cases make you very depressed and unhappy. It's been weaponized. Everything has been weaponized. And when the more you look into Tartaria and see how things were only 250 years ago and compare them with how they are today, you can see what's been done to us.
Right.
It's not just that they destroyed a lot of beautiful buildings and killed, you know, over 3 billion people. It's what they've done to us, the people that are here right now, that we are, we don't benefit from any of this the real technology. We don't benefit from it. We're kept constantly living in fear. We're poisoned in every direction. The frequencies around us are harmful. We're listening to the wrong music, watching the wrong things, using the wrong words. And this, while these people, the parasites, as I call them, sit back and laugh and make a lot of money from us too. So when you look at resets and the great reset we're going through now, it makes much more sense when you understand how the last great reset in 1776 worked and why they reset then. And that is Tartaria. So to understand what's going on now, you need to understand what happened last time.
Right, and that's what they've actually rewritten and covered up so that we cannot know what happened before and don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Exactly.
But yeah, we're uncovering it.
Mm.
Slowly but steadily. Yeah, we'll get
there. Yeah.
Guy, I'd like to really thank you so much for, spending some time with us and, giving us these wonderful insights. People, please just be sure to look into the books that Guy has written. We'll post them below and put them on the screen. And for the Dutch people, the Dutch viewers, if you have a chance to go to Sittard in the south of the Netherlands on the 3rd of May, Guy will be presenting some of this stuff, well, a lot of this stuff, actually, more than we've covered today, in a talk there. So, yeah, be sure to subscribe and actually go there and see him. I'll be there as well. I mean, I've already made sure that I have a spot there.
Oh, brilliant. So, that's great.
I'd love to see you in person.
The talk that I give is obviously more in depth, and there are dozens and dozens of images that I show on the projector to show people, because it's all very well saying these things, but you need to provide evidence to support it,
right,
which I do, including a CIA document as part of the presentation that clearly states Tartarian history was to be completely rewritten. So I've got some pretty damning evidence. If people are interested in reading my work, they can get my books from Amazon, but they can get signed copies from my website, and I ship them all over the world. Every week I send them out. And the website is called thetartarianempire.co.uk. thetartarianempire.co.uk. And I send them all over the world. Every week, all over the world. So if they want a signed copy, they can get one from there. If they want to read a little bit about the books and then buy one from Amazon, great. They're all on audiobook and Kindle as well. So it doesn't matter where you get it from. If you're getting the information, then that's good enough.
Well, I suppose a signed copy, that sounds really nice. I'll look into that. I'll go to that site. And I suppose buying directly from you would be, people would be supporting you and your work that way. So, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, it doesn't matter to me how they buy it, just as long as they read the information.
Right.
But there are people out there, and I understand why, don't want to buy anything through Amazon.
Right.
And I can understand their reluctance. For me, I have to use Amazon because I couldn't get somebody in Britain. I couldn't get somebody to publish my book because of what's in it.
But
it's been published in Germany. It's been published, well, this year actually in Japan, and it's in Polish as well. It was just here that no publisher was prepared to put their name to something that basically destroys everything everybody's ever known.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much. I'll be sure to see you in Sittard in May. And I wish you a very nice day. And thank you so much for joining us.
You too. Oh, it's a pleasure. You too. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks.